Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Thaddeus Rutkowski. Rutkowski is a graduate of both Cornell and Johns Hopkins Universities. He's the author of two novels, Rough House, published by Kayla Press, and his most recent, Tetched, published by Baylor Publications. Both books were finalists for the Asian American Literary Award. Welcome to the show, Thaddeus.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Let's begin at the beginning. When did you first discover that you wanted to be a writer?
I don't know if it was a discovery, really. I think that it was an instinctive thing, and I believe that when I was a teenager, I found that I could express myself through words, and it was a way for me to communicate how I felt to people, and I found it was the easiest way by using words. I also drew and did visual art, and I majored in fine arts and painting at Cornell. So I pursued both for a while, visual art and creative writing. Mm-hmm. I found, though, that creative writing was more comfortable for me.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember the first thing you ever wrote?
I remember writing when I was in second grade. I guess I was 7 years old. A science fiction story that I illustrated with a picture of a spaceship.
Oh, great.
With a pilot in the rocket. And on lined paper, that kind of lined paper that you have in grade school.
That's great. Now, you've had a lot of work published in literary magazines and literary journals. Can you tell us what the form of writing is that you're having published? Is it poetry and
excerpts? I do a mix of formats. I would say my writing is a combination of prose, poetry, and spoken word. I studied fiction. That I was in the fiction program at Johns Hopkins Graduate School. But I went to a lot of open readings when I moved to New York City and developed a kind of a spoken word style. And then whenever I try to write fiction, it comes out kind of poetic. So there's a poetic element to it where I pay attention to language, but I'm also telling a story. So it really doesn't fit a format. That can be a problem sometimes.
Uh-huh. And when you say spoken word, how is that different than poetry? Is it really written to be spoken and not to be read alone?
Right. I think of spoken word as live presentation of a piece, of a poem. It came out of the slam format, the poetry slams, which I started doing in the 80s, in the 1980s, where, you know, it's a live performance and you're trying to connect with an audience immediately. Now, poetry on the page is something else where someone has time to study it and to read it and to read it again if they want. You only get one chance with spoken word. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference, and I don't know if I prefer one or the other. I think that I write mostly for the page, and I also have this other side that I use because I enjoy meeting audiences in a live setting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, before we talk in depth, which I want to, about your recent novel, Tetched, I want to talk about your style. It's been described as minimalist and you know, just snapshots. And tell us how you came about that.
Right. Well, my books are really collections of short pieces, short bits, that I put together in a sort of a collage to build a story with a beginning and a middle and an end. But each piece is complete and separate in itself. Each bit, maybe it's only a paragraph, maybe it's a page. I want each piece to be like a complete little story. And the way I do that is I distill things and I select things and I pare things down. I also add sometimes if I need to add to make the story make sense or to add up. But that's the way I work. Maybe it's because I don't have a long attention span. I'm always doing something else, and I'm writing on the run or writing in between doing other work.
Uh-huh. Well, I read Tetched, and I thought it was quite a fascinating book. It reminded me of little expressionist paintings, all the little chapters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, each scene is supposed to be vivid and visual. And to conjure up an image in your mind of characters, of people doing something. There is incident. There's a lot of incident, and there's a lot of things happening. But I don't have a lot of exposition where I comment on what's happening.
Yeah, there isn't a lot of narrative tying stuff together with scenes and...
Right, there's not a lot of connecting narrative. You're right, but I do try to make things relate to each other. I mean, the voice is consistent. There's one voice throughout, mm-hmm. Telling the story, mm-hmm. Which is basically my voice. Mm-hmm. So there are things that tie everything together throughout the book.
Yeah. So let's delve into Tetched, your most recent book. Now let's start with telling us what the title means.
Right. Tetched was a word I heard when I was growing up in central Pennsylvania. It means touched in the head, and it's a slang term that actually is in a couple of dictionaries. It might be hard to find in a dictionary, but I found it in a couple. I used the definition from the Microsoft Word dictionary on my computer in the first page of the book. I put that on the first page of the book so that people would understand what it meant. And actually, I had a discussion about using that as a title because I thought it might be obscure. And the editor and the publisher encouraged me to use it and just define it as meaning crazy or unhinged, touched in the head. And I think it gives a sense of the place of the book, too. It's a place, a rural area where people use slang that we usually don't hear.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I first saw the title, it reminded me of my Irish relatives. They used to say, she's tetched in the head. You mm-hmm. know, it almost sounded like the accent was being used by spelling it that way, you know?
Yeah,
I thought it was an Irish word.
There are many dialects and accents, and I wanted to bring that out or to, you know, echo that in the title, yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, the book focuses on a very eccentric family. The father's a frustrated artist, the mother's an immigrant from China, mm-hmm. and the son, of course, is the narrator. Mm-hmm. How close is this to your real life?
It's very close to my real life. I use my experience to come up with my fictional material. I use my memory of these events because they happened a long time ago. You know, I'm pretty far from that now. And so the way your memory works is it's selective, and you might remember things differently from the way someone else remembered it or from the way that you experienced it at the time. So the story has been changed, or it has evolved in the process of writing it. You know, I did want to get across the idea of being in this unusual family of, you know, Chinese mother, American father, and being a child who's half one and half the other, mm-hmm. and doesn't feel like he belongs really where he, you know, in the town where he lives or even in the family he lives in, because he's what you'd call an other. And that's the description you'd see on, you know, some kind of form you'd fill out about your ethnicity. Mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. other. And I wanted to talk about what that's like, what that feels like. And I also wanted to give some idea of how one learns to cope with that. I didn't want to just make it a desperate situation or a difficult situation, but I wanted to show a way out and escape from that. And the narrator does grow up and go to college and move to a city where he tries to build a life for himself. He still has problems, or different problems as an adult, but it was started in childhood.
Uh-huh. And the narrator, the boy in this, is definitely eccentric and very what one would call strange. Now, do you think that this stems from being biracial, or is he just an odd personality?
Well, there are many factors. I can't really talk about psychology because I'm no expert in the subject, but I will say that the book is about identity in a lot of ways, and the narrator is just as touched as everybody else, and I think a lot of it has to do with not knowing who he is and trying to figure that out, and it's a question that I'm still trying to answer, you know, in his case, the identity has to do with race. In other people's cases, identity could have to do with gender or it could have to do with sexuality. But in the case of my character, it's mostly a racial kind of identity that he's dealing with. The thing is, it applies to other areas of life, too. There's, you know, it becomes a kind of a sexual identity crisis later. I'm not sure if I'm forgetting your question, but I just wanted to say that the narrator has these issues that are based on his racial identity. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you in your website, you do have a little essay that you wrote about your name. Let's talk about that. You yourself, Thaddeus Rutkowski.
Would you like to hear it or just talk about?
Well, let's talk about it, and then I'll have you have you read it to me.
Sure. You know, my name is an unusual name because it sounds Polish, and my father was of Polish descent. His parents spoke Polish, and I heard Polish when I was a small child in the family's house. But people, when they meet me, can't figure out how that name goes with my appearance because it doesn't seem to. It doesn't seem to fit who they're expecting. They're expecting someone like a linebacker on a football team when they read Thaddeus Rutkowski, and they meet me, and I don't look like a linebacker at all. So, you know, it's been something I've had to explain to people. So I wrote a piece sort of as an explanation in case anyone was wondering, and people always wonder.
I bet a lot of people think you chose a pen name. Has anybody ever said that? You know how authors used to do that years ago?
Yes, yes. Well, people told me it sounds literary because it's such a long name. But no, it wasn't a pen name. Actually, it came from a Polish epic poem called Pan Tadeusz, which is a book-length poem that in Poland all school children have to read this poem. It takes place, I think, in the 1800s, and that's what my father got the name Thaddeus from. It's Tadeusz in Polish. I'm probably saying that wrong.
Well, no one will correct us at this point. Do you want to read the piece that you wrote about your name? I found it quite nice.
Sure. It's called What's in the Name. The name is Thaddeus, but the choice of the name was ill-advised, I think. No doubt my parents wanted something classical or something radical. Oedipus and Orpheus would not do, and for some reason Theodore and Thelonious would not either. So my father decided. My mother, it seems, did not have much say in the matter. She picked Shaolin, which means little forest, and sounds something like her first name, Jain, which means good tidings. But I don't go by Shaolin. What I go by is a little stranger. To many people, I am Thad, which is easy to spell and fairly easy to say, unless you think it's fab, as in, oh, fab. I'm glad they put real borax in you. My first and middle initials, JT, are even easier, so I use them when I make reservations, arrange for deliveries, or sign my name on lists. One of my old friends calls me JT, except for the times he calls me Stud. Other people I know call me T-Bone. Some of my friends think T-Bone is too casual, but I like it better than Fazool or Pube, which are the nicknames of other guys I know. I have not been called Tadpole for quite a while, but an old girlfriend used to call me A-Tad, which was short for A-Tad Stoned. Some of my close relatives still call me Tad, but so far no one else has adopted the shortest form. When I meet people and tell them my name is Thaddeus, they say, that sounds like a biblical name, or that sounds like a 19th century name, or that sounds like a plumber's name. Sometimes my new friends take an initiative and shrink my name to Chaddy, Teddy, or Patty, or Chad, Ted, or Pat. For a while, people in my office confused me with another Asian guy who looked like me and called him Thad and me Henry. My last name is no less problematic. Rutkowski just does not fit my face. At times, however, to my great surprise, I pass for Eastern European. Someday I might change my last name to my mother's maiden name, which is simpler and more descriptive, and become Mr. Wong.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Thaddeus Rutkowski. He's a writer. That was great.
Oh, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Now, you know, I want to go back to the book... Tetched, because
yes.
I'm very interested in the father in this book.
Yes.
He's ambivalent about having kids. He thinks it's going to impede his artistic endeavors.
Right.
Now, if this had been a woman character, don't you think she would have been called a monster? Aren't we still in that age?
Well, it's not a flattering portrait of a man either. The father is not
but he's really
a model.
Funny.
He's not a model really to follow. He's funny because I looked for the humor in his behavior, but as a child, you know, seeing someone like this, you might not understand that he's frustrated about his own work, and he's frustrated because he's not succeeding as an artist. But as a child, you know, you feel blamed for that,
mm-hmm.
and it might really be inside him.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you know, in real life, I mean, my father was a teacher. That was his background. And in the book, he does spend a lot of time teaching his children or other children how to do things. I mean, he does show some you know, moments where he shows concern for how the children are doing. And he's the guy who really raises the children because the mother is outside the home. Working. She works outside the home in a hospital. So the father's around a lot. And in my case, my father did that. He worked at home on his art.
Mm.
And he also, my father was in the army, and the army experience stayed with him. So, and he thought that that was the way to discipline kids or whoever, was to use the army method, which is a very, I haven't been in the army, but I can imagine that it's a very strict method of keeping order, keeping mm-hmm. things in order. So he had that experience, and that caused a lot of his language. His language was kind of vulgar and loud, and he also had a drinking problem. So you combine, army experience, a drinking problem, and trying to be an artist. Well, I think that maybe some things are going to be holding you back. I think that, you know, there's some conflicts, there's some inner conflicts, and that's the kind of character he is. That's the kind of person he is.
He does come off as quite frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of see it as maybe, compulsive, behavior, was something that a child would see as kind of crazy, but mm-hmm. now I, as an adult, I see it as just, well, you know, you can go to a group for that. You can go to a group and you can talk about it, and you can get help.
I saw some of his behaviors as his way of coping.
Right.
Which you know, he was trying to keep it together in some ways with this behavior, even though a kid would see it as pretty radical. As an adult person, me reading the book, I felt like this was his way of coping. He did the best he could in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he wanted to raise his children right, and he wanted to see his children succeed and see his family happy. I don't doubt that there's love in this family, but I think that that there were obstacles to expressing it.
You know what I want to bring up too? In some ways, you touch on this man's. It almost seems like he has a bit of racism in him, even though he married an Asian woman.
Yeah, I
mean, and you dealt with it with humor.
Right. Well, you know, racism is learned, and he grew up in America and the American society, and learned whatever that society taught
mm-hmm.
about
the
race.
Values.
And
mm-hmm.
Again, it's a conflict because he married an Asian woman, so he was drawn to her and wanted to treat her well, but then I think his own upbringing was he was Polish Catholic, so that's pretty different.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, every group, I think, doesn't know what another group experiences.
Right.
You know, you don't know, and the ignorance leads, I think, to making judgments about other groups
mm-hmm.
based on what group they belong to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The stereotypes
are
attributed
yes.
to every individual.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, do you do a lot of revision when you write these books?
I do.
Uh-huh.
I do a lot of revision. I think that some of the power of the prose comes from a strong language, and there's a kind of a rhythm that I try to set up, or a tone, and it's actually hard to achieve that and to keep it consistent
mm-hmm.
throughout a book of a couple hundred pages. So I have to work pretty hard on the actual writing, the mm-hmm. actual writing process. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So would you call it polishing? Because it almost seems like it's very well done stream of consciousness. So some of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I'm lucky, I get something on the first or second pass,
mm-hmm.
and if I'm not lucky, I'll have to keep doing passes over the same material until it seems to flow. Mm-hmm. And if I'm very unlucky, I just pitch it out. And I just write something else.
So. the writer's final final decision there. Now, you also teach. So what are some of the important pieces of advice you give to people who are aspiring writers?
That I give to my students?
Uh-huh.
Well, I think one thing I say is you have to motivate yourself. No one can force you to write. But if you have something to say and you have a need to say it, well, you can find advice and you can find feedback and you can get encouragement by doing many things. You can go to a workshop. You can go to readings. You can send your work to editors, meet other writers. All of these things are connected with writing and with helping you sort of advance your writing or make it better. And that's what I tell people. And I'm there as sort of a coach or an advisor. I can suggest approaches to writing or things people can try. And if they feel comfortable, then they can keep doing it. But I can't give you your story, and I can't make you tell it. Mm-hmm. So that has to come from the student.
Mm-hmm. And do you think most people who start writing do want it to be out in the public arena? They want people to hear what they have to say?
Well, people who do what I do want that.
Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking some people might do it just for an exercise.
Exercise or just to get it out.
Self-discovery, perhaps.
Yeah, sometimes you have to share just to get it off your chest or something mm-hmm. like that. Self-discovery, mm-hmm. Therapy. It could be for all those reasons, but my approach is to communicate with an audience. I mean, I'm very interested in making that connection with an audience somehow and telling something of myself to someone else.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. Making them think or see things differently.
Maybe see things differently or maybe strike a chord and mm-hmm. make people think, hey, I felt that or I've been there.
Mm.
Maybe it's only with one sentence, but that's worth it
mm-hmm.
if that happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, all writers get rejections. How do you deal with rejection? Does it help you grow? Do you throw it out and say, I don't even want to think about this?
Rejection doesn't get any easier.
Mm-hmm.
Even the more you get doesn't make it any easier. If you get a lot of rejections, it's still not easy. And I think being an artist of any kind means getting rejected most of the time. At least that's my experience. Mm. And I think, though, that the way that you get ahead is you just have to persist. You just have to keep doing it. And you have to realize that the people who do get ahead aren't necessarily the best writers or the best artists or the most talented people. They're the people who stuck with it. And they're the people who kept sending it out and who just kept asking, kept knocking.
Kept believing, huh?
Kept believing, kept knocking on the door. And that's how I see it. But each rejection, you tell yourself, don't take it personally. The people are rejecting you, probably like you as a person. they just don't want your work. But I take it personally anyway. It's tough. It's tough to do a poetry slam and not win. And even though it's supposed to be a game.
But it's part of the process just in life. If you want to have anything out there, you're going to find people who don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't want to hear what you have to say, and so on, Now, do you think you'll ever produce a traditional novel? Because I know your first two novels, Rough House and Tetch, are these little...
Right. You'd call them experimental or innovative.
Uh-huh, innovative,
unconventional novels. I'm always trying to go toward the traditional novel. I've always wanted to be mainstream, and I'm doing the best I can. This is the best.
Well, what's your version of mainstream, though? I mean, what novel do you admire?
Oh, what is mainstream?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different styles.
That's tough. People I admire are not mainstream. I mean, my heroes were Richard Brautigan and Donald Barthel when I was growing up, when I was in college and high school. And they are well known, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't call them mainstream.
Mm, especially not Brautigan, yeah.
Yeah, Brautigan or Barthel.
Brautigan,
They're sort of innovators they're literary writers. But, some mainstream, I would say Philip Roth is mainstream, and I think he's recognized as that. I mean, I feel I'm sort of embarrassed talking about him because he's at he's at the top. He's the person we would all look to as the novelist that we should look
the great American novelist.
The great American novelist. And you know, I admire his prose. Actually, I was reading American Pastoral about a month ago, and you know, I like the voice in it. You know, he's able to get into the head of a different person. His characters, I'm sure, are not him, and he has a great way of telling us how they think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, his prose is magical. Mm-hmm. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left. What are you working on now? And anything we can expect in the future?
Well, I'm working on a new book manuscript. I have, I think, over 200 pages of it. Mm. And it's similar to my first two books in that the format is similar. It's still a collection of these snapshots. But I'm trying for a more continuous narrative. You know, I'm trying for, you know, a story arc, you know, more of a dramatic arc in the book. And, you know, I don't know if I'm actually achieving that. But, you know, I'm hoping that it will be better than the first two, because it will be, you know, a little more uniform. Mm-hmm. A little more uniform.
Does it have a title yet?
Tentative title is Learning Curve. That's okay. What I was thinking, because one of the stories, one of the chapters is titled Learning Curve, and I usually take the title of a chapter and use that for the book.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we have run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, and I do wish you well in the future. And anybody who's interested in experimental fiction, read Tetched, because it's fascinating.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.